Okay. All right, let's see. All right. Well, I think I'm ready. Do you have a name picked out?
Okay.
You have a character name?
Can I play a freelance game marketing consultant and podcaster?
Yeah. Let's see. Did you roll for your attributes?
Well, not all my abilities.
Yeah,
right.
Go ahead and put those on there. And
oh, all right.
Don't forget your skills.
Good.
Oh, wait a minute. No, you won't have any skills, will you?
Oh, well,
you don't
not
need
a lot
skills
of them.
with that title. Let's say.
I think okay. I'll call myself Rhett Butler.
Rhett Butler?
Rhett Kip.
Rhett Kip?
Does that sound good?
That's your character's name?
Yeah,
Rhett
that's my
Kip?
Character's name.
All right.
I'll write it down right
that's
here.
That's crazy. Rhett Kip. Who's got a name like Rhett Kip?
What character are you playing?
I'm going to play a director of game development.
Oh, yeah. We don't have one of those in the campaign.
Yeah. So, let's see. I don't have any experience at all, so I'm perfect for this job. I'm going to be, let's see, I'll pick a name, something dull. Ben. How about Ben? Ben Clark.
That's, like, boring. That's, like, two first names.
Well, yeah.
Ben Clark.
I know, but it's easier
Clark
for me to remember,
Kent.
And I don't have much of a memory.
Clark Kent is two first names, too.
Well, yeah, but that's been taken.
Well, right.
This is supposed to be, like, a real life game.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. All right.
All right, so let's see. We should start the campaign. Did you pick a campaign out of the box there?
No.
All right, I'll grab one here. Let's see. What's this say? Let's see. We're playing gaming experts.
Okay. That'll be good.
All right. Nobody's ever going to believe that. I don't know anything about this, but let's try it. All right. We should call this campaign something.
Paper.
Moolah?
Paper Moolah.
Paper Moolah. All right.
Next time we could play Much Ado About Miniatures, Adventure 21.
That'd be great. I love role-playing games. This is great. This is going to be the greatest game. We are going to make so much money off of this game. And I like that we're playing it while we're developing it, you know, and we really haven't given any thought.
They develop all the good games.
Yeah. They don't really give much thought to it. All right. Let's see.
That's excellent.
Let's start off by pretending to do role-playing a game review.
Okay. I'll roll off the game review chart and see what we get.
See what
random
you get.
Selection. Number six. What is that, Jeff?
Number six. Let me see. That's on page 408.
I can never remember what page it's on.
I should get these charts. Okay, here we go. Number six. It's Advanced Squad Leader, the role-playing game.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, yeah,
okay.
That's a good one.
Let's review that.
Yeah,
wow.
Okay. Advanced Squad Leader, the role-playing game. All right.
Everyone knows Advanced Squad Leader, greatest tactical war game, World War II war game in the world.
Oh, the greatest game in the world of any kind. Oh, okay. What name again? Rhett?
Rhett.
I'm never going to get over that name. All right. So what did you think of ASL RPG?
I thought it was really fun to mix role-playing and board gaming together. And it was really fun.
That was very well role played.
Thanks. Are you laughing at my?
No, not at all. All right. Let me
wait,
see.
I have to roll against my intelligence to see if I was smart enough to say that. Yeah, I made it.
Okay. All right. I'll go now. It's my turn. We don't need initiative because nobody has initiative in the Paper Moolah game. Okay, so I need to talk about the RPG as it fits in with compared to the real world. Squad Leader, the RPG, is the most realistic game ever conceived. The authors, Jeff and Dave, are brilliant beyond compare. At no time has any other game approached the amazing realistic realityness of ASL the RPG.
Very realistic.
Everybody should go out and buy it. Stop your real life. Go out and play ASL the RPG.
And then just listen to our podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We have a podcast about ASL.
The Two Half Squads.
What a coincidence. And I'm Jeff.
And I'm Dave.
And we're your hosts. Tune in.
Welcome to Paper Money, the biweekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from upfront to Uno. Avalon Hill to Mattel. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rep Chip.
Today is April 2nd, 2010. And a big April 1st thank you for our good friends Dave and Jeff over at the Two Half Squads for our April Fool's intro there. I hope you guys enjoyed that. We'll be getting them back very shortly on their podcast called, in fact, The Two Half Squads, which is the only podcast 100% dedicated to Advanced Squad Leader. And, Rhett, I think Dave and Jeff have been sharpening their knives ever since Gen Con.
I believe so. You know, they still have a bit to get back at us over the ugly monkey. And
I think we'll
remind them.
That's right. That's right. Having won the podcaster pub crawl, they're gunning for us now. But that's okay. We're going to get them back on their next show. So listen to the Two Half Squads, and we'll be doing their intro on their, I think it's episode 34. So, again, Dave and Jeff from the Two Half Squads, thank you very much. And that is the number two, halfsquads.com. So the week after a major trade show, and I feel like there's almost no news this week. I'm not sure how we got to that point, Red.
Yeah, pretty quiet. I'm very surprised about that. Thought there would be some major announcements, but apparently not.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone, you could be listening to the shortest Paper Money ever recorded. I know that's saying something given the way Red and I have a propensity for speaking, however, and going long, but this could be known as the filler episode.
There we go.
I'm very excited about that. Yeah. On that note, let's go right into the news. Okay, so Rhett, give us a recap on Gamma. Kurt from Games Plus went, correct?
Yes, he did. So this is all secondhand knowledge.
Kurt, our reporter in the field. Thank you, Kurt.
Our reporter in the field, yes. Well, a couple of things that he of interest that he noted. One is that the Battlefront people for Flames of War are going to launch early war this year. They will maintain all three periods, so early war, mid-war, late war, throughout their year. They will also, in about 3 years, be launching the Pacific. So the Japanese will finally get out there, which is something their fans have been asking about.
I just want the 24-inch plastic naval bombardment overlay.
You know, it's nice just to say, you know, that half of the table, it's eliminated.
Yeah, that half of the table's gone. That's right. That's right. So, all right, so... So Battlefront has finally announced the release in the Pacific stuff, which I have doubts about how well Pacific's actually going to do. I think that's a total fanboy thing, and I think that's why it's 3 years out. What were the other announcements? What else do we have?
There's a new company who I did not get the name of who will be introducing pre-painted metal Napoleonic miniatures along with a game system for that. It's kind of interesting, as you know, we've talked about before, the pre-painted stuff hasn't done really well, but no one's tried historical, so you know, this could go somewhere potentially. I'm not sure.
I didn't mean to talk over you. A lot of those guys have been paying for years to send their miniatures out to get painted, so maybe this makes sense for a big section of the Napoleonic market.
They don't really need that much of a success to get going. I mean, the problem in most Napoleonic games is the number of figures you need. So, you know, a few people could, you know, really drive this along fairly nicely if they work that way.
By the way, I don't know if you can hear in the background, my rooster is very excited about pre-painted Napoleonic miniatures.
Well, that's good. I haven't actually heard your rooster get very excited about pre-painted Napoleonic.
Then I will not mention it again. Moving on,
AEG announced that they are going to be doing the Dust Miniatures game, which is kind of interesting given the fact that a couple years back, Fantasy Flight released the Dust board game, and that Rackham's AT-43 was originally based on the Dust universe. Apparently something didn't work out there, and therefore it became AT-43 instead. Mm-hmm. But that's another... You know, thing that he pointed out that looked fairly interesting. So another board miniatures game coming out in the near future, and this one by AEG, who again, you know, seems to be expanding what they do, not just an RPG company, not just a collectible card game company, you know.
If you look at, you know, Days of Wonder and FFG, the past couple years, that the big box, well, the Ameritrash, right, is the name for it. The big box game with lots of stuff in it is doing really well for those guys.
Yeah.
And I think AEG is going, look, you know, RPGs are a little flat right now. CCGs are down. Let's move into it. So it makes complete sense to me. All right. What else do we have from Gammon?
Well, another thing that he pointed out was what Wizards of the Coast is or isn't doing. Their big emphasis was really not on the releases, but more on their organized play. So organized play for Magic, organized play for D&D. And that's not the miniatures, that's the actual 4th edition organized play concept that they're working with. Their announcement was their Essentials line. Their Essentials line are basically trade paper size, less expensive versions of the 4th edition. They will include new builds for different character classes, so people who already have stuff will have a reason to buy them. But long-term, it appears that the hardcovers as we know them will be phasing out. And it's not going to happen right away. They're at least around for a year, they've said. But they will be phasing those out. They will not be doing the GM's Guide 3 was part of their announcements, though. So, you know, they're also moving away from some of the things that they previously had targeted. I find this really interesting because I think this is an indication that Wizards is kind of, you know, grasping at straws. I'm not sure where they think 4th edition should go or what they're really trying to accomplish with 4th edition. They really seem a little lost on this line.
Well, I have to agree with you. The idea of phasing out the hardback core rulebooks and replacing them with the smaller size trade paperbacks. And again, folks, if you're not familiar, the trade paperbacks usually are roughly 8.5 by 5.5, okay, is what I want to say. They're half a sheet of paper, a little larger than a paperback, right? You know, that we're used to lugging around, from Tor or the science fiction paperbacks, but still not a large product. And quite frankly, in the smaller format, you end up with a thicker book, and usually the binding's a little bit more fragile. It's hard to lay flat on the table. I think Wizards is backing away from something.
I'm not sure that they have a direction.
That's true. Maybe they're not backing
away.
They're just running in circles. Yeah. So
yeah, they don't seem to have a direction. You know, which there's a number of licenses that they have that there's been no word on them promoting. You know, in greater strength, things that have always been strong for the D&D line. Mm-hmm. And yet this is the direction that they've chosen to go in this time.
Interesting. Interesting.
Anyway, other interesting news is not so much what was there, but who wasn't there. A number of major manufacturers didn't attend. Fantasy Flight was one. Rio Grande was one. Paizo was one. There's also a possibility that Mongoose wasn't in attendance. Kurt didn't remember seeing Mongoose, but he wasn't sure that they were there or not. But they were all represented through their distributors. Both Alliance and ACD apparently had things there to help represent them. They did show off some of the games, so things like Fantasy Flight's Horus Heresy, people got a first look at that one. Got to see some pictures of that myself. That looks pretty interesting. And, you know, Fantasy Flight, I think, has done a really nice job with the whole 40K and Warhammer lines. I think Games Workshop should be happy with what they're producing at present.
Well, no, it's not uncommon for Rio Grande to not attend a show, right? Even at Origins, they're represented by Decision Games runs the booth. Callie Cummins sells Decision on one half of the booth and Rio Grande on the other. And even at Chicago Toy and Game Fair and some of the other shows I've been to, it's been a local retailer or local volunteer crew who run the demo area and the sales area. So it's not uncommon for Rio not to be there, but I'm really surprised Peso wasn't there.
Yeah, I am surprised that all three of these companies weren't there. It is the Gamma Trade Show. It is the one big show. You get to meet and greet with your retailers, which is always kind of nice. But apparently I'm thinking that they must be working with the idea that their money would be better spent elsewhere and that, you know, their information that they're passing along through distribution and their electronic media and the like is, you know, effective enough that they really aren't giving out any, you know, better information at the trade shows. You know, so like I said, money better spent elsewhere in advertising or whatever.
Yeah. Though, you know, it might be that too, that they decided, look, you know, I've got a website that's, you know, that's well hit, and why not just spend my money attending the consumer shows and base my advertising on a pull model rather than working with the retailers and doing kind of and less push, more pull.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Origins Award nominees. These also came out this week, as some of you may know. The Origins Awards, it's just the 36th year, but they're nominated by the folks attending the Gamma Trade Show, and then they're voted on by the folks attending the Origins Show in July. And now there's a zillion categories, and I'd like to mention, by the way, that Rhett, of those four companies you mentioned, none of them were nominated for an Origins Award.
Yeah, when we went to the role playing.
Yeah, let's. In fact, let me run through the role-playing game nominees list because this is very interesting as to who's not on the list. These are the games nominated for Best Role-Playing Game: Doctor Who, Adventures in Time and Space from Cubicle 7, Eclipse Phase from Catalyst Game Labs, Fantasy Craft from Crafty Games, A Song of Ice and Fire from Green Ronin Publishing, and Supernatural Role-Playing Game from Margaret Weiss. Not on the list, Rhett?
Well, not on the list would be, well, Fantasy Flight's Warhammer Fantasy RPG, which released last year, any of the Warhammer 40K that they do, and to me, the biggest surprise, Paizo's Pathfinder, you know, what seems to be the number one RPG out there. Actually kind of shocked that it's not up for an Origins Award.
Now, this is going to... sound like a stupid question, and I wish I'd had a chance to research this. I wonder if those guys aren't Gamma members.
You know, that's a possibility. I don't know.
You know, if they decided they weren't going to join Gamma, maybe Gamma decided maybe they're not on the ballot.
Yeah, that is a possibility as well. It, in any case, it does seem strange. As I said, in particular, Paizo, you know, leaving Pathfinder off, that would be, to me, that's like leaving D&D off.
Right.
It's a little strange, you know. So, not quite sure what's going on there.
Yeah. So, again, by the way, we'll publish a link to a complete list on the Origins Award nominees. So, if you're really interested to see all that. As pointed out, by the way, in the purplepawn.com, Origins Awards have always been kind of a grab bag because some companies lobby very heavily. Some companies are at Origins and push it at their booth. Some companies aren't there. But take it how you want. I think the nomination is a good thing to have. But it's kind of a usual suspects kind of a thing. Moving on from the Gamma Trade Show. Hey, it wouldn't be – Rhett, we need speaking of themes, we need a lawsuit theme. I'm gonna have to. So any listeners out there who happen to be into filk or folk and who want to handcraft us a lawsuit theme, send that in. And this is over the game Chronology. Gene Roumelet, I'm pronouncing that right, designer of Chronology, is suing Fundex for not reporting properly on how many of her games have been sold and adjusting her royalties accordingly. Jane's original license was with the Great American Puzzle Factory, which Fundex acquired in 2007. Apparently, Fundex is also defending itself from a lawsuit from Kenneth Johnson, creator of Phase 10. Now, Phase 10's a big deal, and I think it's interesting to see Fundex in two lawsuits on this.
Yeah.
I won't go in. I've actually done some quotes for Fundex in the past 4 years and didn't get it. I don't have a feel for the company. I couldn't, you know, I didn't deal with them that much. I didn't actually print any of the games. Guardians of Graxia. U.S. publisher Petroglyph released its previous game, Panzer General Allied Assault, as both a PC game and board game simultaneously, and it's adopting the same approach for the upcoming Guardians of Graxia, which is a 1-2-player game, ages 10 and up, 45-minute time, $60 price tag, August 2010. Now, what I think is interesting about this is, one, it's another big Ameritrash game, right? Lots of boards, lots of cards, lots of miniatures in the box. But more importantly, the marketing of releasing the PC game and the board game at the same time. I think it's an interesting approach. I don't know how Petroglyph is. I haven't seen Panzer General go over the top on the geek or burn up the sales charts anywhere else, but it's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I like the idea, and I'd actually like to see an approach like that more on the RPG lines. You know, they've done a couple of the crossovers with RPGs, and I think that that might be another avenue for them to try this, you know, marketing approach. It still comes down to a question of, you know, who does finally do Final Fantasy as the RPG?
You know, maybe after the final Final Fantasy.
After the final Final Fantasy. Well, it's only up to 13. There's still plenty of numbers.
That's right. You know, actually, Final Fantasy, the role-playing game, might not be bad. You could do a codex, you know, for every Final Fantasy that comes out, I guess. And then, finally... I'm sorry, I'm laughing before I even read the headline. There is yet another kerfluffle about MMP's King Philip's War. I actually saw pictures of someone protesting. So there was actually at least one person who felt strongly enough to be photographed holding a sign that says, "Don't trivialize our history," or something like that. And then someone else, again, another columnist, wrote a piece saying that MMP should pull King Philip's War from the market. It hasn't even been released yet, but I'm just agog. I think this is a teachable moment, Red, and I think Brian or anyone else at MMP, if you're listening, this is a marketing opportunity. Go out there and sell the idea of a historical simulation to people who've never heard of one before.
Yeah, this is really strange. You know, someone would think that this is a trivialization. You know, I know numbers of teachers who use various board games and the like to help teach history because it gives people more of a hands-on play of, you know, what's going on, gives them a little more grasp of, you know, what happened and why. And, you know, frankly, I'm just kind of surprised. Apparently, as we mentioned earlier, this is just someone who has no idea what it is and is perhaps expecting, you know, a Doom-style game, you know, to come out there and just, you know, make a mockery of what's going on as opposed to a historical board game.
All right, and we're going to stop talking about it there. I promise, no more King Philip's War stories, unless, you know, there's another one.
Yeah, the next time they report it for us.
Message for you, sir.
All right, let's move on to reader mail. Now, normally, Rhett does our reader mail. However, Rhett is handicapped this week. Rhett, how are you handicapped?
I'm handicapped because we're recording via phone. My computer is kaput.
Exactly. So, hard to read from the screen of his cell phone. So, I'd like to, we got a great, great note over Skype from the guys at Dice Like Thunder. And they let me just read it to you. This is Dan from the Dice Like Thunder podcast. I just found your show a couple weeks ago and have to say, give you guys a big thumbs up for what you're doing. While it may not be designed for the average gamer, I find it absolutely useful for our podcast. We're a Chicago-based tabletop war games podcast that's been going strong for 81 episodes, and I think they just released their 82nd. About 98% of what we talk about is devoted to Games Workshop's 40K, but we've occasionally covered other war games. Adepticon is coming up. You can tell we got this last week. And I was wondering if you guys might consider joining us. We're hosting a Wing and Beer Night on Saturday with two other podcasts, The War Banner and Gamers Lounge, and some fans. Guys at Dice Like Thunder, thank you very much for listening to the show. I apologize. I could not get over to Adepticon. I'm on the wrong side of the lake, and I know Rhett was busy. But thanks for thinking of us, and thanks for listening to the show. And then we have one other shout-out this week. This goes out to Ms. Amy Conroy, who recently wrote me on Facebook and said, and I quote, "Speaking of the podcast, could you pep up the music or something? I have been listening periodically when I run and could use some tempo."
Isn't like our banter?
You know, apparently our banter doesn't, you know, I think she wants 100 beats per minute. So basically we'd have to wrap the whole show, and I can't do that.
I won't do that, even if I could.
So. Hey, I tried to karaoke the Humpty Dance once. Let's just say it was not a good night.
We'll not even go down that road.
That's right. In fact, we may edit that out in post just so no one ever asks about it again. So anyways, we would love to hear your feedback and comments. We'd also like to hear your questions. All this info is on our website at purplepawn.com/papermoney. But let me read it to you anyway. Rhett, I know you know our email address, so I'm going to have you do it anyway.
Our email address is papermoney at, well, you know what? I've totally forgotten our email address. Papermoney.
At purplepawn.com.
Pawn.com.
Man.
Yeah, no.
All right. And we'll be auditioning for a new host. Just send your request to papermoney@purplepawn.com. One who can remember our big sponsor. And then also you can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast. And or you can call us. This is our Skype line, 773-634-9377. Leave a message on that line. And Amy, if you're out there, I promise we're going to put in some fast pay. We'll put in some music at the end of the show for you. So so call in and let us know how you enjoyed the show during your next jog. So, all right, moving on. We're not interviewing this week. We wanted to talk about role-playing games because we knew there would be a lot of big news about them after the Gamma Show this week. And insert wah-wah sound effect there. All right, Rhett, I want to talk about role-playing games this week. And I specifically did not book a guest because I wanted you and I to talk about this. We've been playing role-playing games for a really long time. We've worked in the industry
pretty
for
much since the advent of role-playing games.
Exactly. And for the or in my case, shortly there, you know, shortly after the invention of fire. You were there, I think, pre-fire. But I wanted to ask three questions about the role-playing market and talk about them and kind of say, you know, this is two guys who've been around the industry forever, and what do we think about it? And so, okay, question number one. How is the post D20 market? Did we peak during the OGL era, the Open Gaming License era, of role playing games? Are we going to see? Are we flat for a while? Are we going to coast downhill? We just mentioned how Wizards doesn't seem to know what they're doing. They're phasing out the hardcover books. They're moving to trade paperbacks. What's the state of the role playing game market today?
Well, I think that we saw the pinnacle during the absolute heyday of 3.5, at least with the number of releases, because everybody in the world seemed to be producing product. There was a point where there were like 8 new third edition products a week coming out for like a year, which drifted down to like 6, you know, over the next 2 years, which is an enormous amount of product. As far as sales are concerned, though, from the few places that I can look at, it doesn't seem to have been a overly dynamic loss. They're certainly down from, as I say, the peak, but this is still a very, very strong market. The difference now is more diversity. Paizo certainly has picked up a lot of people.
Now, wait, there's less products, but there's more diversity. What do you mean by that?
Well, there's more game diversity. Primarily, while there was more products, all the products were focused on Dungeons & Dragons 3rd Edition.
Okay, so they were focused on they were using the D20 system. So there's more variety now in the systems or in the worlds of the milieus, or where do you think the variety is?
There are more genres out there, more game systems out there. We have a number of fantasy games out there that are coming out on a regular basis, some old ones being revised, the new ones on the market. Mm-hmm. You have everything from RuneQuest, from Mongoose that's been revised. You have, Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition out there. You have Paizo's Pathfinder out there. We have, the Origins Awards, obviously, the Doctor Who role-playing game, which we haven't seen since the FASA days. We have lots and lots of role-playing companies out there. New Edition of Champions just recently came out. Mm-hmm. And as a category, I think they're all doing really well overall. Again, it's not at its peak, but I don't know that that's really a problem. That's still just maybe waiting for another big, cool event to come along. Role-playing games still seem viable, very viable.
Well, now let me. That leads me to my next question. And by the way, I view the D20 market, or not the D20 market, the role playing game market. I think it's right now it's mature, it's stable. I don't think we're going to see. I don't think it's going to be the driver for the next year or two, or maybe even three. I think the next big kick in the pants is actually going to be AD&D 5th edition, which, quite frankly, at this point, I expect in 2011 or 2012 at the very latest. And but I think that it's going to set. I think that it has settled down, and it's going to be stable or slightly down sales until we see the next big thing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree on that. But I also believe that the next big thing is being looked at. Having talked to a number of people in the industry, they are looking outside the box for how to launch role-playing games, craft role-playing games, interact with role-playing games. I don't know how soon it'll be, because I think they're going to be multimedia is what we're going to see. And, you know, that's just a question of when they can either find the financing or find the, you know, the right connections there. You know, like I say, when do you find someone like, you know, Square Enix to back you with its $1 billion revenues and mm-hmm. say, what do you want to do?
Right. Well, it'll be interesting. And again, like I said, I'm putting a 2-year horizon on this, because anything can happen. And I've said before that in the post D20 market, because not everything is tied into the D20 system, there is much more room for innovation. All right, you can come up with a new system or a new idea and get sales. Whereas before, to get the sales, you had to do OGL, you had to do D20. So, again, I agree with you. I do think that there could be something big on the horizon. Next question: are role playing games still the backbone of your game store? Again, this is a retailer question, but very specifically. You know, if you're a gamer and you walk into a store, are you still looking for role playing games? I mean, are they? You know, is this? Do you need to stock deep on role playing games to make your game store work anymore?
If you're looking for a complete game store, you know, a good representation, then absolutely. While the bigger money at the moment might be in the Euro games. The role-playing games are still the staple. I mean, they hold down the thing, mostly because the lines continue. Unlike the Euro game where, you know, today's Euro game is tomorrow's forgotten memory, the role-playing games' lines keep going and going and going. I mean, you know, pick any of the long-term 20-year RPGs. You know, they're still out there, they're still growing, they're still adding new products out there to them. They're stable, their sales rates are fairly active, they're updated fairly regularly, new games come out on the market, so, you know, you can expand. Most people know what the core games would be. Talking to a distributor certainly would get you the information. And, you know, if I were opening a shop, I would certainly put them in. I would put in lines, and I wouldn't get too diverse. So maybe anywhere from a half dozen to a dozen core RPGs, but, you know, in pretty good depth with their support, mm-hmm. all their source books, etc.
Sure. So you put in, say, AD&D, Shadowrun. What are two more titles you got to have? Pathfinder.
Absolutely, Pathfinder. And then I would look at some of the titles from Fantasy Flight, AEGs, Legend of the Five Rings, which is also going to be a new addition this year. The Champions is a possibility, especially if you have a comic-related store.
True.
You know, that was an area.
Also, Champions, by the way, also has the MMO is finally out, or has been out for a little while, I think. So that's a nice tie-in, by the way, if the computer game is out. Now, third question, Red. You've got $50,000. Do you start a board or card game company? Do you start an RPG company? Or you just say, screw it and buy stock in Blizzard Entertainment?
Well, you know, as one of my friends would tell me, you know, if I'm looking to make money, you know, in realistic form or security and the like, invest in Coke. If I'm looking for the fact that I'm out there, I've got a great idea, I would really like to be creative, and I don't mind, you know, not doing as well as one could do in another field. You know, the games market is still a pretty viable thing. Is an RPG a good thing? Yeah, I think an RPG is a good thing. I actually think that lines are, to me, the biggest thing. It's something that a number of companies have done a really good job with over the years, in the sense of it's not just a one-style product. There are RPGs, there are board games, there are miniatures games. They're all interrelated. They're all tied together. There's licensing agreements. They get, you know, different groups of people to work on them in some cases. Sometimes it's, you know, held in-house by a single company. But, you know, it really comes down, I think, to which one do you think you can be most effective with yourselves? You know, if you're a board game designer, by all means, the answer is go into board games. If you're an RPG designer, you know, it's a whole different thing. And as I said, to me, I think there are greater possibilities of some new and exciting thing coming out in format, in a new presentation, a new way to play, so to speak, for RPGs than almost any other category at this point.
All right. I'm going to say that was a weasel answer. You said all three. I'm going to tell you, if you've got $50,000, you should go buy stock in Blizzard. And I deliberately picked $50,000 because it's just barely enough to open a retail store. It's enough to launch one board game idea, and it's enough to probably fund an RPG company if you're willing to do it out of your basement. If you've got one core game and lines, you can probably fund it for about a year, year and a half. But I'm going to say as a board game company, it's not enough.
No, I
think you should start out with $100,000, because you need to line up four titles, all of which are going to cost you at least 25 large to get printed and to get them out the door.
You know, I ignored your money. I thought you were just questioning, you know, the value of one versus the other.
Okay.
If we're talking about the money, that you're way under budget. You know, a good game store probably would have a hard time launching for under $100,000 nowadays, with general inventory that it needs, the ability to survive the first 12 months, which is, you know, what you have to do in order to establish yourselves.
Okay, I should have picked $100,000. But yeah, exactly. But let's face it, even $50,000 is a ton of money in the game industry for a lot of companies, and as an RPG company. If you can judge, right, and this is the thing, if I had $50,000, let's say I had to choose between starting a board game company and starting an RPG company, and I'm not a game designer, I would pick a board game company because I can judge a board or card game design. I am not as good with RPGs. And so if I had to pick that, that's why I would pick it. But you can launch an RPG company on
$50,000. Absolutely. You know, well, that was one of my points, is that on the inverse side of that is that you can launch a role-playing game company for probably $20,000 if it's not your main business. If that's not, you know, how you're earning a living, you could do it.
And more importantly, and this is huge, if I've got $50,000 and I'm launching an RPG company compared to a board game company, my production costs are a boatload lower. Right. I'm gonna have a core product that costs $20 to $30, and I can get it made in the US for $5 or less, okay, which is huge, to be able to control your costs that way. So you've got less in manufacturing, that gives you more money to spend on marketing, and you are gonna have to spend a ton more on editing and layout, and you are locked into your design for a lot longer than with a board game, right? Board game fails, okay, throw it out, give me the next one. But you can do it, and because your manufacturing costs are so much lower, you don't have so much stuff tied up in the inventory. So again, I think you can do it. I'd say at $50,000 it's a real close call as to how I do this, but I'm gonna say at $50,000 buy stock in Blizzard, and at $100,000 I think you got enough to really make money with an RPG company.
Yeah, you know, there's more people out there as a pool to draw from. The question is, you know, what can you afford? How much art do you put into the book? You know, there's people out there who will do layout for you. You know, again, there are ways to do this. Plus, if you're just a designer, as opposed to, you know, anything else, The possibilities exist that you could invest in a pre-established company. You know, there's a lot of companies that if you came up with a good idea and were willing to take that same $50,000 and say, you know, what about this? You know, you might meet with a lot of approval.
Anyways, we're kind of rambling on about this, so let's wrap it up. Again, role-playing games. If you have any opinion on this, by the way, send us an email, because this is something that we know everybody at some point has played a role-playing game. What do you think? Email us, papermoney@purplepawn.com. Let us know. 773-634-9377 is our Skype line. Leave a message, and we'll play it on the air next week. Upcoming stuff. Rhett, what do we have for... We don't have anything, do we?
We don't really have anything.
Yeah, there's no big shows, actually.
We just passed Gamma. The next big show probably is Origins.
Next, Protospiel South. This is the inaugural event. If you're a game designer, Protospiel South has just been announced. Invisible John now works for Steve Jackson Games. He's a guy over there. He's a game designer. I forget John's street name, but his online handle over at Board Game Designers Forum is Invisible John. Is organizing Protospiel South. It's going to be in Austin, Texas, towards the end of May. I think it's like the 25th and 26th. So that sounds interesting. Protospiel is a show here in June. It's not a show, actually. It's a meeting of game designers over in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I attend every year. I'll be talking this year about publishing your game.
And that's all for this show. Our next podcast will be on April 16th. Again, I'd like to thank Dave and Jeff of the Two Half Squads for that wonderful introduction. Where are you guys in for it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm Rhett Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark. And Amy, stay tuned for your very special fast-paced music. I sound like Casey Kasem there, don't I?
You do a little bit, yeah.
Excellent.
Except you need to
keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars.